Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, how do you feel about jumping out to a 25-point lead and then just coasting our way through here, maybe giving up a lead every so often and then just getting out with a win?
I love it, man. Let's approach every podcast that way. Let's start strong and then just fool them in the first like 12 minutes and then just bullshit for the rest of the pod.
Well, I've fooled them for the first like 800 episodes or so. So why not just keep it
going? We're on the right track, baby.
Yeah. I have people thinking that I might know what I'm talking about. Well, mostly you know what you're talking about. I just kind of coast alongside you. So you're the LeBron James. You set the tone and then I just kind of ride
who,
alongside.
Who are you on this team? Who are you on this team, Anthony?
Jared Dudley, for sure.
Hey, so you got, I know you got them hands, right? Like, yeah, I know you can throw them a little bit. So yeah. If anyone steps to me, then I expect you to, you know, act accordingly.
I got to say, that was an impressive shove.
Oh, it was. It was.
Like, that was the kind of shove that you throw when you, like, when you actually kind of know what you're doing a little bit. Most NBA players, like, they throw a shove and they're like, I guess I put my hand here, and then my other hand goes like there, and then I go like that, but then I also kind of like step back as that's going on too. But Dudley like full on moved all of Orlando.
Dudley was ready to fight. If Dudley would be good in the fight or not, I don't know. It doesn't actually matter because for exactly like you said, like most NBA players aren't actually. And so it's just these little like shoves, right?
Yeah.
And what I loved about that is like, so Dudley never plays, but he was just letting people know like the tolerance for like those little shoves and just anything like that.
No.
Like, look, we got the king on our team, right?
Yeah.
Every good king needs a good palace guard.
Yeah.
Right. Needs people around him where his enemies can't even get close. Right.
You're saying that's not Troy Daniels?
I don't believe so. No. Jared Dudley may not be, you know, the best guy fighter on the team
Iron
or whatever.
Mike.
It's not the point. Right.
Yeah.
It's not the point though. Right. It's that like, if you do anything in this whole arena of like trying to shove us or just trying to, you know, do stuff like that, nothing is going to be tolerated along those lines. If I need to get a 5-10 game suspension, cause I throw a shot at you, hey, I'm willing to do that. And so that sends a message to everybody else too, of like, look, like if you want to go down this route, we're actually going to go down this route.
Yeah.
But none of this like shoving each other bullshit. Like we either do it or we don't. And that's going to have teams like less likely to get in the mix on that.
I feel like if I was an NBA player, I would take just a couple intro level boxing classes, maybe some jiu-jitsu, something like that, just so that it looks like I know what I'm doing out there. You know what I mean? It's like
you don't think your boxing experience would carry over to
No. I'm not if I was a generic NBA player, not if like personally. Yeah, like if I would imagine I could make myself look like I know what I'm doing out there if it was just me. But if I was a generic NBA player,
got it.
As part of my training and getting ready for the NBA, why not take a couple boxing classes? That's all I'm asking.
I wonder how much cred like James Johnson's black belt has got him. Whoa. Like, do you ever watch a game and not have a reference to James Johnson's black belt when they're playing the Heat? Right.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that guy would actually whip your ass. Right.
Yeah.
Like, Lord knows you have any training at all.
Like, if you had a yellow belt, you whip your ass.
Yeah. Oh, NBA fights. They're the best.
Yeah. All right. Today's show is not going to be all about NBA fights. The Lakers got out of Orlando with an ugly 96-87 win. They head into Miami tonight by the time you guys are listening to this. As you guys can hear, I'm still kind of recovering from this thing. So bear with me. Today we are going to answer you guys' questions. We are really close to getting all the way caught up heading into the weekend. We've worked our asses off. The last mailbag that we did, we said like 5 words per question. I answered a few questions in yesterday's show. So Pete and I, and actually we were planning on, you know, kind of creating a few topics of our own, but I was going through the questions, Pete, and they're really good today.
Yeah, they're usually good, man. They've been producing the show for the last 6 months, so I'm grateful for them.
Shouts to the listeners. So, with the Lakers just having come off of the Orlando game, a writer here, KCP Burner, wants to know, Anthony and Pete, Thoughts on a Kuzma and Cook slash Daniels for Jonathan Isaac trade?
I mean, Orlando never does that. Like, no. Isaac's a stud. Like, he's not there yet.
Of their franchise.
He's got the ingredients to be a stud, and he showed it a little bit last night. But yeah, that's not even remotely close to what you'd have to offer to get Isaac.
I don't know if the Lakers could actually put together a trade for Jonathan Isaac.
Yeah, since you're not trading LeBron or AD.
Yeah.
No.
There's nothing. And look, I think he's good. He has a couple things he needs to address over the course of his career, but across that entire Orlando Magic roster, I don't think there's a player I like more on that team.
Yeah, he's got a higher ceiling than anybody else, and he's gotten a lot better, right? This is his third year, I believe, mm-hmm. and he's always had the defensive clay, but he's added some offensive pop. I think he had 19 in the second half.
Yeah.
And those nights, similar player to Ingram, right? Those nights will start happening more and more often as he gets older.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the next question here. Brian J. Dow writes, where do you think the Lakers would be if Tyronn Lue was the coach right now instead of Vogel?
Yeah, not in as good of a place, right?
You like, think?
I think that I don't. No, I don't.
Wow.
Think, bro, we're 22-3. And, like, mm-hmm. everything's working. Like, mm-hmm. we've got to scratch and claw to find something to bitch and moan about. Like, I mean, he wouldn't have been my choice at the time by any means, nor was he the Lakers' choice.
No.
Vogel, that is, at first, but.
Or second.
I was thinking about this today, Anthony. Like, we talked a lot last year about how the Lakers need more basketball nerds mm-hmm. in the franchise. Vogel's a basketball nerd. That's essentially yeah. why he's there. He's not there because he's a former player at a high level, he's not there because he's the son of a former NBA great. He's not there for any other reason than the fact that he worked his way up from being a D3 player to like a student manager at Kentucky, and he moved there without any promise of a job and just worked his way up the basketball food chain. Well, how do you do that? How do you beat, like, how many people want to be an NBA head coach?
Yeah.
Thousands, tens of thousands of people. Well, how do you beat all of them? By being better than them.
Yeah.
Or being a former player, like having some
sort of.
Working
your ass off, and yeah.
Right. And so, like, Vogel, I think, is providing some necessary basketball nerdiness to this team, which isn't to say that Lou was not that, but Lou was a former player, mm-hmm. right? And I feel like we've got, between Jason Kidd on the bench, Lionel Hollins as a former player, and all of these veterans, we've got the been there, done that thing kind of covered amongst players to where maybe Ty Lue doesn't have as big of an impact in retrospect, but having somebody who's like really all about the details, several players have made comments about how good the scouting reports are and yeah. how like prepared this coaching
Rondo
staff
says
is.
He's taking notes on Vogel to be a coach next.
Bro, like
that's
look,
insane.
Rondo's gonna butter up.
Yeah, I mean,
but he's not the only guy saying stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, you're absolutely right.
And look, Rondo has been buttering up coaches. That's how he remains in the league. By the way, I've never heard him like. Well, all right, fair. But I've never heard that kind of effusive praise from any player about any coach, right? Any non Popovich or Phil Jackson coach. Like, that's pretty impressive praise. The thing I was thinking about, too, regarding Lou specifically, was the number one thing that Lou would have brought was buy-in from LeBron.
Mm-hmm.
Vogel got that.
Yeah. Yeah, and, he earned it.
Yeah. And so, you know, if that's the thing that Lou was seen as irreplaceable for, he's kind of been replaced.
Yeah, like I think Lou has better offensive concepts than Vogel, but I have been impressed with how Vogel has altered the offense a little bit as mm-hmm. the season's gone on, and we've seen the offense skyrocket over the last few weeks. So, like, I mean, I think I'd still probably take Lou over Vogel as an offensive coach, but overall, I think Vogel's doing a better job than Lou would have done here.
Yeah, I think the Lakers have offensiveness covered with Jason Kidd, but that's just me. Let's go. let's take a quick second here, and when we come back, we're going to continue answering your questions. I kind of like throwing the occasional shot in there like that in my current state because I can't laugh through it. So I wonder if people are actually going to pick up on what I said there.
You just have transferred all of your animosity to the Los Angeles Dodgers. I've noticed you've just got this hatred in you that you need to get out. The Lakers are not allowing you a platform. So is Andrew Friedman Danny Ainge?
I mean, I fired that tweet off, right?
Did you call him that? I didn't see it.
I got a picture of Friedman, and I got a picture of Ainge, and they have, like, similar facial expressions, and then the Great Spider-Man minds meme.
Think alike. Yes, yeah.
Here's my thing with the Dodgers, and I said this in a tweet, too. Quick Locked On Dodgers rant. The Dodgers have this contract. They have a TV contract that pays them upwards of $300 million a year. More than $300 a year. It's like roughly $325 million a year just off of their TV contract. That doesn't take into account other partnerships and sponsorships that they have along the way. That doesn't take into account game revenue, any number of things. They have this incredible TV deal that pays them an insane amount of money and also makes it so that 70% of this fan base can't watch this team. 70%. Mm-hmm. Could you imagine if 70% of Laker fans couldn't watch this team?
It would be fully unacceptable.
It would be awful. It's awful. And here's the thing. The Dodgers at no point have ever raised a problem with this. Like, no, I covered, I have friends at we both have friends at Spectrum, but I have friends on the Dodgers side of Spectrum, and they have, I'm not going to throw names out there, and I'm not even going to say that they personally have raised gripes or whatever, but the Dodgers have been terrible corporate partners. They have never once, like, told their fans, hey, show a little support to Spectrum so that we can get more people watching our games. Nope. Never happened. They just said, well, here's our money. Make sure the checks are there on the first of the month, every fucking month. And by the way, we are not going to help you at all in this respect. DirecTV, you guys want to be partners too? Fine, fuck it. But we aren't going to help Spectrum at all. And then, by the way, we're going to get all this money and not spend a fucking penny of it. Nothing. We aren't going to spend a single dime of it. We're coming, like, really, really close to all these World Series championships. We have lost to the last four World Series champion, but you know what? That's close enough for us. We have people still showing up at the fucking gate year in, year out. These division titles, that's perfect. In LA, you are defined by championships, and the Dodgers don't seem to understand that. And you know what? I'm glad I host the Locked On Lakers podcast, because we actually get to represent a team that cares about doing the city well. The Dodgers very evidently don't. Whew, I feel better.
Yeah, no, that was quite a thing to watch. You need to get that out. Like, you've got this feeling about your teams where, like, when they piss you off, they really piss you off. And
yeah,
with the Lakers not providing much of that, I can see you're kind of stifled. So
it's probably not great to do that when I'm, like, close to a pneumonia. Screaming into a microphone isn't great for pneumonia.
Lose the rest of your voice. Yeah.
Yeah. God, that pisses me off. Gerrit Cole, we were this close to signing Gerrit Cole. They didn't even make a fucking offer to Rendon. Ugh.
Those are the worst. So that's partially why it reminds me of Ainge.
Yeah.
Is like the whole, like, oh, we almost had this, or there was, like, don't tell me what you almost had. The guy you almost signed, or the offer that was like, oh, that was competitive. And all of it's bullshit to just make the fans feel better. Like, oh, they tried.
Yeah.
Like, either you get the guy or you don't. Like,
right.
We didn't get Kawhi. We got Anthony Davis. Like, whatever stories around it, like, they don't matter too much, because it all comes down to getting, especially in the NBA, getting superstars. So, yeah, that whole, like, really good around the margins, but not really understanding, like, hey, you need some big time players to shine in big time moments. And that is something for all of the, you know, frustrations that we can have with the Lakers on the margins over the years. That is, they're the margins for the reasons. Mm-hmm. And they're the margins for a reason. And the Lakers get what it's all about in terms of superstars. Yeah. And watching this team this year, it makes me like, oh, yeah, this is who we are. Like, for better or for worse, this is the type of team that we are. This team's so fucking cool, man. Like, aside from being really good, they're just like, they're cool. They're stars, you know?
Yeah.
Everybody, even a guy like JaVale McGee, who has, like, if JaVale McGee had, like, average NBA balance, he'd be a star. Mm-hmm. But does have these kind of superhero-y type powers with all of his length. He's kind of quick. He can jump high, right? So he does certain things that fit into that. Yeah, but a lot of these guys have pop in one way or another, in a way that it's watching them, I'm like, oh, yeah, this is what a championship caliber team looks like.
Yeah.
And this is for the Lakers. It's not a bunch of, like, solid, you know, Boston Celtic.
Try hard, you know, whatever.
Yeah, like oh, we're well above average players and we work really well together. Like, that's great and all. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. But fucking stars of the NBA, right?
Right. Well, and look, we talked earlier, I forget which show it was, but we talked about how the Lakers, once they get their star, they're very good at winning once they get that star, right? So, like, the Lakers got Kareem, then they got Magic, they built around those guys. They got Shaq, they got Kobe, they built around those guys. They got, and then when they still had Kobe, they got Kobe Powell, they built around those guys and won those two championships, right? The Lakers, when they feel like they're close, and I have any number of criticisms about the Lakers, right? And we have gone over that plenty. But the one thing I can say about the Lakers is that if they feel like they're close, they are going to go for it. They are going to, they're going to cash those chips in, and we are actually really going to commit to winning championships. And the Dodgers right now employ the league MVP. They employ Cody Bellinger, right? For years, they employed one of, if not the greatest pitcher, best pitcher of his generation in Clayton Kershaw, right? So the Dodgers have had those stars. They just haven't done anything with those stars. And with all the criticisms that I have about the Lakers, when they have those that kind of talent, they turn that talent into championships. And the Lakers right now, or the Dodgers, they're okay with, we were this close, and we were this close in terms of World Series, and we were this close in terms of free agents and stars that we could have added, right? And all these little these gaps that they keep. Oh, we're this close here, and we were this close here, and we could have won here, and we could have won there. Well, all that's doing is adding to the gap between where the Lakers are and where the Dodgers are always going to be. That's where we are.
I have nothing to add on my end, man.
All right, well, Dodgers ranting aside, that took up a nice little segment. Let's take a quick second here so I can catch my breath, and we'll come back and answer your guys' questions. All right, so Arim Tim Timo writes, "Hey, Anthony and Pete, love the show. Recently moved from L.A. across the U.S. to Tennessee and use your podcast every morning at work. I wanted to bring up Rondo's three-point shooting and how, as weird as it sounds, it's almost automatic when he makes a specific move. If he sets up and drags his right foot back, even with his left foot before shooting, he almost nails every three. A simple mechanic seems to have made him a great impact three-point shooter. Any thoughts on his mechanical changes? Also, hell no, fruit does not belong on pizza. Keep pineapple away."
My man, he had it on lock
all the way around. That was your kind of listener.
Good luck to you in Tennessee, my friend.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's exactly it right there in terms of the mechanics. Whether or not Rondo's going to make the shot or really has a chance to make the shot, or if his feet are set. Like, he never hits those elbow pull-up jumpers, and he actually shoots them kind of weird in that he will over-penetrate into the paint and kind of, like, step back to the elbow. Right, mm-hmm. Yeah, like, little hop back on that. And not, like, every time I'm talking on my TV, like, that's off. That's mm-hmm. off. But, like you said, once he gets his feet right in exactly that way, he, you know, that's when he's hitting them half of the time. But if teams close out to him quickly, he's not going to have enough time to be able to hit those. So that's okay, though, because if teams are closing out to him, that opens up his passing, which is
really the entire point.
Right. Like, he just needs to be good on those open threes. And that mechanical change that he's talking about is exactly why he's been good on those. So then you've got to at least respect the jumper, close out to him there. Then that's a driving lane. And he gets into the teeth of the defense, drive and kick, drive and dish to a big. So even though his mechanics are not really conducive to getting shots off quickly, that's fine for the type of player he is.
Yeah, that's why he appears to pass up a lot of what we consider open jumpers for most shooters, right? Is because he doesn't feel comfortable with where his feet are upon the catch of that pass. I also, like, I think there's a lot to be learned here from a lot of other non-shooters that, even if you don't, because Rondo's, like, there's so much wrong with Rondo's shot. Like, there's just, it's not a very pretty shot. Nothing about it is how I would probably teach a kid to shoot. But
I agree. It's gotten better, though. It's not as bad as it once was.
Yeah. The turd has been polished. but, like, I think if you are a coach or if you are a young player what you can learn from Rondo is that you may never be the traditional good shooter, right? You may never be the kind of shooter that, you know, when you catch the ball, opposing coaches yell shooter at, right? Mm-hmm. But what you can be is you can be a passable enough shooter to make yourself a threat. And what that requires sometimes is maybe not following the traditional rules. Like with Rondo, he does have a very long windup for his shot. He makes absolutely sure his feet are absolutely set, and he uses all of the time that opposing defenses are willing to give him. And that makes him, therefore, a better shooter and is now the kind of threat that occasionally gets closed out too hard. That was not a thing early on in Rondo's career. No. So if you're kind of looking for a lesson to be learned here from Rondo, I think that's the lesson to learn, is that, yeah, maybe you may never actually be a good shooter or even a mediocre shooter, but can you make yourself a threat with, you know, really slowing things down? I think that's possible.
Right on, man.
Kinetic Groove writes, question for Anthony and Pete. If you could set aside the Hall of Fame requirements that the Lakers usually employ and was allowed to pick one or two players from each championship era to have their jersey retired, who would you pick and why? Eras I'm referring to are the Showtime era, Shaq and Kobe, and then the Kobe and Pau teams.
All right, so just so I'm clear, these are guys who are not in the Hall of Fame that if I ruled the world, I get two choices from each era?
Yeah, one or two.
Mm-hmm. One or two. All right, so from the Shaq and Kobe era, give me Robert Horry. Mm-hmm. From the Kobe Pau era, Fish, maybe? That's a harder one. Lamar was a better player. I'd probably go with Lamar, although Lamar, like, none of these guys ever made an all-star team. But just in terms of, I don't know, I kind of like the idea of glorifying role players in some way. Like, they are role players, and I do think the Hall of Fame is for you have to be so amazing in your role
but I don't think this means like getting them to the Hall of Fame, like getting their jersey retired by the Lakers.
Oh, gotcha. I'm sorry. Yeah. That's the part I missed. All right. Mm-hmm. Then yeah, those two guys, Fish and Horry, would be my choices. You?
I agree with there. I actually kind of think Horry has a case to be made for the actual Hall of Fame.
Okay.
Because, like, what we consider a stretch four right now.
Yeah.
I don't think it's coincidence that Robert Horry has, what is it, six titles?
Seven.
Yeah, I don't think it's a coincidence that he has that many rings.
Like, you know what's funny, man?
He introduced spacing when we didn't really understand the concept of it.
I always crack up about Phil, like, going in on three-point shooting teams, the how's it going and all that, because even before Horry, Tony Kukoc was kind of the first like stretch four type guy. He'd play that position alongside MJ and Pippen. And then it really became a thing with Horry in those with those teams. And so his like Phil in terms of personnel really approached it more like a modern team than other teams did and saw success from it. Saw success from your four spacing out to the corner or to the wing and being able to knock down shots. So yeah, like I it's not a coincidence that style player was kind of a harbinger for where the league would go in the next decade.
Yeah. My galaxy brain take there is that Phil was actually thumbing his nose at a strategy that he knew helped his teams, and he just hoped nobody else employed. Like, that's my. But yeah, I would say probably Horry. I agree with you, and would go so far as to say that I would really consider him for the actual Hall of Fame. Fish, look, man, you win five championships for a franchise. Your jersey gets retired.
Yeah.
That's my general stance. And then to go back to the, because they also asked about the Showtime era, who would you go with between Coop? I guess Byron would have been there. AC Green probably gets a nod. Kurt Rambis, like, between those role players, who do you elect?
Yeah, you had Norm Nixon as well. It's you know, in terms of like,
my dad loves him some Norm Nixon.
Norm Nixon could play, man. Norm Nixon got moved because Lakers
Magic wanted the ball.
Right. I mean, that's why your drafted team the other day wasn't going to work. Magic's demanding a trade. Who's this LeBron James guy, man, with the ball on his hands? Like, give me the ball. Trade it, ship his ass out, right? So I would probably go with Cooper. This is an interesting question because, like, Fisher is not or was not a better player than Lamar was.
No.
You could make a pretty good argument that Byron was a better player than Cooper was as a two-way type of guy. Mm-hmm. It's just funny how we kind of remember guys fondly. Do you think those guys should be, like, outside of a hypothetical, but should actually be your Fishers, your Ories, your Coopers? Do you think they should be retired jerseys for the Lakers?
Man. Part of me says yes, but then the other part of me is like, how many numbers would the Lakers have retired?
Right.
You know, like I think this is kind of a born out of necessity more than it is, you know, the honor of having been in the Hall of Fame. I don't really like the Hall of Fame per se. Like, I think if you win five championships, you should have your jersey retired. You know, like that's just a general stance. So if you have won five championships for the Lakers, your jersey should be up there.
I kind of like how the Lakers do it in that you have to be a Hall of Famer. Like, Jamal Wilkes didn't get his jersey retired until much later because he got into the Hall of Fame much later. Uh-huh. Like, you have to be a Hall of Fame player elected to the Hall of Fame or like with Kobe. Yeah, right. Or broadcaster. And in order to be eligible. And you usually have to win at least a title with the Lakers for that to happen for exactly that reason. Like, how many numbers would we have up there? The other guys, I think of them as made men. Like, who are the guys as the studio analysts? D. Fish and Robert Ori always got themselves a job. AC Green has been the color commentator for South Bay Laker games for several years now. Mm-hmm. Like, you're part of the familia.
He's good,
you know?
Too.
Yeah. And so you've got all of these guys that are not quite Hall of Fame caliber players, or even maybe not that close to it. But if they need, you know, if they need a little bit of shine, they need a job as a media guy in the studio or something like that, all those guys come home and they know the value of that. It's funny, Danny Green actually referred to that, right? Like, he knows he's closer to the end of his career than the beginning of it. You get ingratiated in LA, you know, some good things end up happening for you after your career.
Yep. Danny, come on the show. I'm telling you, it'll help.
That'd be great.
My one question that I really want to ask, you know, whether it's Danny Green or a player who would kind of roll with the joke here, is I would start them down the line of, so you've all been in a situation where hanging over the season is the decision that a superstar has to make regarding their free agency. Are you nervous about Jared Dudley leaving at the end of the year? And I just want to see what the reaction would be. Like, everybody, and you know, the thinking is that I'm heading them down the path of the Anthony Davis thing, but then dropping Jared Dudley's name in there, I just want to see what the action would be. All right, let's answer one or two more questions here. LA240825 writes, "Hey Anthony, so in the offseason you talked about your eight teams that you viewed as favorites to contend for the championship. I believe it was the Jazz, Nuggets, Lakers, Clippers, Rockets, Bucks, Sixers, and Warriors, LOL. How many teams do you view that like that now, a quarter of the way through the season?" So I guess I'll start. I still see the Nuggets as championship contenders, the Lakers, the Clippers, the Bucks, and the Sixers. Everybody else is kind of falling by the wayside.
I think there's three. I think it's Lakers, Bucks, Clippers.
Yeah.
And I don't see Denver as that. I think Philly could make a trade. They don't have enough in the backcourt. Mm-hmm. I really don't think they have anybody they can give the ball to on the perimeter where it's like, hey, go score us a bucket. And that happens all the time in the playoffs, man. Like, Jimmy Butler was hugely important for that team. And they just don't have somebody else who can do that. Tobias Harris ain't enough. So that said, like, they've got a ton of talent. It's just not properly distributed across the roster. Mm-hmm. So if they were to make a trade for a guard, say move Harris for somebody, then I think they could get themselves into the conversation depending on who it was for. But as of now, I don't think so. There's nothing in their play this season that suggests that Houston is a team to me.
Yeah.
But they've been there so many times, and they basically only lose to an all-time great team in each of those years. It just makes me wonder. And yes, they have Westbrook. It's a different team in the last couple of years. I'm just not like fully writing them off. I don't consider them a contender. But if somebody else wanted to make that argument, you wouldn't get too much pushback from me.
My thing with the Sixers is I like that they have identified their playing style and they can force it upon anybody.
Just about anybody. I think it'd be hard against the Bucks and the Lakers because we got size, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. That's true. And then, man, I wish there was a way to just cash in on a bet that you know is visibly, like, is just going to win.
What's that?
Because I may or may not have put some entertainment value on the Warriors not making the playoffs this year. It was 4-1 when I made the bet.
Mm.
Like, I should be able to just cash that out, right?
Get an advance on that? Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be nice. Christian Dez writes, a lot of analysts are saying that the Lakers can't possibly stay this hot and will face adversity at some point. Other than something as obvious as injury, what type of adversity do you think the Lakers could face this season? I was actually thinking about this today, so I'll present it to you and see if you agree. I think they have too many guys.
Yeah, that's good problem to have, but
yeah.
Like that backcourt rotation, if everybody's healthy, which they haven't been really at any point this season, mm-hmm. there's probably somebody feeling a little sore about not getting enough minutes.
Yeah.
I think the chemistry on this team is pretty great. And whoever it is, you know, not that much better than the guy across from him, where I think like you could put that fire out, and even calling it a fire is probably overly dramatic, but mm-hmm. that's where my mind goes to. And even then, like, that's such a slight concern. I am so heavily in the only injuries can screw us. Like, we could lose in a series, don't get me wrong, mm-hmm. but like, this is a top three team in the NBA and injuries are the only thing that changes that.
Yeah. In terms of adversity. Yeah. It's that, and I'm still a little nervous about the matchup with the Clippers. The wing stuff really makes me nervous.
But that's team dependent, right? Like, that's that team.
Right.
With
that's
two
not,
great wings. Yeah.
That's not traditional adversity. That's just a concern when we get to that point of the season.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think, so the Dodgers did this over the last couple years, where they ran basically a 6-man rotation
mm-hmm.
and used the 10-day IR to basically give guys an extra few days off at the end of their mm-hmm. cycle or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I actually kind of think the Lakers could try to employ a similar strategy where they keep everybody fresh over the course of the season. Oh, yeah, he strained calf totally. He needs to take a couple days here and there. And then they kind of cycle through guys that way.
I recorded with Darius about an hour and a half before you and I sat down to record, and I made the exact analogy. I referred to it as the 4 outfielder. You know, type problem, same basic thing where, you know, you give someone your calf is bothering you today, take tonight off, that type of thing. So if you can get this edited before Jeannie can get done with her editing on the LFR pod, it'll make it sound like, you know, that you came, that I jacked that off of you.
We spend way too much time together.
We do.
Is the point to take away from there. All right. Last question. Skip Conway writes, having followed the Lakers closely for many years, I usually don't miss many games during the season. I've watched practically every game Kobe played, usually as they were happening. I watched every game of the 2005-2006 season live, with the exception of January 22nd, 2006. It was a Sunday afternoon, and the Lakers were playing the Toronto Raptors.
I was like, why does that date sound familiar?
Yep, a team at the time that was pretty underwhelming. I watched the first quarter of the game, which was not very exciting, and decided to take a nap as it had been a long night the night before. I woke up to the end of the game as Kobe was walking to the bench, finger in the air, done for the night. Clearly something momentous had happened. There was a palpable energy coming through the TV screen. I soon came to realize that Kobe had scored in the...
This guy is going to kill me. Yeah, man, that's a rough one to miss. I was actually on the road when that happened, and I got a text like, pull over, find a sports bar. I was close to my now ex mother-in-law's place, and I watched the rest of the game there because I had it recorded at home. But yes, that I... that sucks. Whoever wrote this, watch fewer games. Yeah.
Whoever wrote this, get into writing. That was really well written.
Yeah.
Anywho, do you have any other, you know, big games that you missed that you regret?
Oh, with the Lakers? Nah, man. I don't think I've... like, I have missed games. I don't want to act like I've seen every game since 1982.
I was going to say, that's quite the humble brag.
No. It's not like that. It's just, like, big, important games. Mm-hmm. I don't really. You?
None that really come to mind. I do have a Dodgers game like that, and I feel awful to this day about it. Because it's not just me. It was my family that was... My family was in town from Texas, and this was kind of, remember, Puig started, was insanely hot, then kind of fell off, treaded water, had a couple moments here and there, whatever. This was in one of the moment kind of swings. Actually, this was a preseason game, if I remember correctly. And my family was in town. The game was wrapping up. The Dodgers were down in the bottom of the ninth. And I just said, like, oh, this is probably over. We can probably get going or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And Puig steps to the plate. They had apparently walked the first two batters of the inning. They were down by two at the beginning of the inning. Puig steps to the plate and winds up hitting an in the park walk-off home run.
An inside the park walk-off. Wow.
Inside the park walk-off home run. And as we're walking out, I can hear like the crowd kind of cheering behind me. So I'm kind of like scrolling through Twitter and I see what just happened. And again, I had like 10 or 12 family members that were in town that I told, like, yeah, we're probably going to leave. Nothing is probably going to happen here. Dodger Stadium is in an uproar
behind
me. And everybody's like, side eye for days, and I deserve every second of it.
Can't believe you made us leave. I have one similar that has to do with the Dodgers. Now I'm a casual Dodger fan, and
more of
a
Yankee fan.
Yeah, and even then, like, I'm just a casual baseball fan in general. And so we went to a game in, and we were in the right field bleachers, and they were playing the Arizona Diamondbacks. And my one thing with games like that are, like, I don't want to miss something historic, right? Or something like you just described, even just one of those, oh, I wish I was there for that.
Right.
And so my girl and I were, you know, getting older, and those bleacher seats, man, those are rough on you, you know, sitting there for a couple hours. You're like, oh, you're shifting around in your seat. The Dodgers are down like 2-0. But the opposing pitcher had Robbie Ray, something like that, for the Diamondbacks, had a perfect game through five innings. And when we were talking about, hey, you want to cut out? And like, no, let's watch. He might have, you know, if this is a perfect game, I don't want to miss it.
Yeah.
Bottom of the sixth, first batter, first pitch, single to left field. Cool. Not a no-hitter, not a perfect game.
Good to go.
Let's go. J.D. Martinez had already hit one home run in that game. He hit a home run in the sixth inning, the eighth inning, and the ninth inning to have like one of 18 or 24 home run games in baseball history. That's the closest I can come, but it's a different sport.
Yeah, Lakers stuff, I'm trying to think, because usually for both of us, if it has a chance of being a momentous thing, like, usually we're in front of the TV anyway.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, like, if it's a playoff game or whatever, and the one thing I will, it's completely indefinable, but I think it's one of Kobe's greatest kind of character traits. It's that he was really good about the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was very good. If there was a chance that something great could happen, Kobe was very good at making that happen. And, you know, his last game is the ultimate example of this, right?
My one what if, my biggest what if in Lakers history, 62 points in three quarters.
Oof.
That's the one time where it's like, if he just stayed in that game and they force fed him, because, like, fuck the Mavericks ultimately, right? And he had 62. Could he have gotten to freaking 85?
Yeah.
90. Like 90? You know, that's the one game where he did not. And of course, he was just like, oh, I'll just get 80 another time. And then he did.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the one where I wish he would have not understood the moment, because they were up 30 or something like that. Like, I get it. Just, I would have loved to see him play the rest of that game.
Well, it was also Phil's decision too.
Sure. Although I think Phil asked him. I think there's a story out there. Oh. That's where the oh no, I'll get 80 next time.
That's an actual quote. I never heard that.
Brian Shaw has relayed this. These are things that, you know, 20 years later or 15 years later, whatever, can become kind of big fish type stories.
Yeah.
But Brian Shaw, I've heard him say that that's what Kobe said. And Brian Shaw was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, this, like, you've got a chance to do it. And like, no, I'll do it next time. And then he goes out, does it the next time. Right. It. Yeah.
That's unbelievable. That's great. I kind of miss that about Kobe. There aren't very many players right now that kind of have that. And it's intangible, and also it's kind of a confirmation bias too, where like he comes through in the moments where you feel like, oh yeah, he just came through in a moment that I should have seen coming, you know, whatever. So yeah, I kind of miss that about him, but in general, there aren't too many. I guess we're pretty lucky as sports fans that if there was something historic that could happen, I guess we were around to catch it.
Yeah.
That'll do it for this episode and this week's episodes of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Thank you guys very much for all the questions and continuing to tune in. The show keeps growing in ways that I'm frankly shocked. I was hoping to be able to hit 5 million by the end of the year. We're going to clear it before Christmas, it looks like. So shouts to you guys. I couldn't be prouder of the show and this thing that we've built together. Thanks very much for that. Hopefully the next time you hear me, I won't sound like I have a literal frog trying to jump through my throat. But for now, have a great rest of your day or weekend. Make somebody else's, and we'll talk to you on Monday.